This is the Steve Cochran Show.
You have one day to make every dream you've ever dreamed for your country and your family come true.
This election is basically between division and unity.
You have one magnificent chance to beat this corrupt system.
It is a choice between strong, steady leadership or a loose cannon.
Now we have one flawed candidate to be.
Well, let's show tomorrow there will be no question about the outcome of this election.
I think it's going to be a Brexit plus, plus, plus. Does that make sense?
Let's get out and vote, Philadelphia, tomorrow. Let's make history together.
Drain the swamp.
It's almost over. This is actually a good day. This is a great day that everybody envies America for. And with all seriousness, you should be proud to be an American today. Unless you decided that The Price is Right this morning or something else you're doing this afternoon is more important than getting in line to vote, because you can't do that. I mean, you can, but I hope you won't. I stood in line for an hour yesterday. I early voted yesterday. Pat Brady's here. Good morning, Pat. How are you?
Morning.
How long did you wait?
About an hour.
That's not bad, considering that we just set a record.
I think it's going to be, you know, and here's a genius statement based on the lines around the country. It's going to be a big turnout today. 118 million votes, I think, in 2012. We should be able to beat that number. Pat, I know you share this because you're a sappy patriot like I am.
I am. I love Election Day. I was in line for 2 hours yesterday. Nobody was complaining. Everybody was there to do their duty, and they sat in line and did it.
You know, it's amazing, people, when in line yesterday, again, moms with kids, little kids.
Yep.
Little kids.
Yeah.
You know, I saw a woman with four kids under the age of five.
That's great.
Waiting in line for an hour to vote. And the kids all had, you know, fake IDs.
Right, of course.
No, but it...
Those are my kids now.
But the process we'll go through today will lead to a winner, in quotes, a winner probably fairly early tonight, but we could be around for a while. And one way or another, we make history. We'll either have the first female president in this country's history. There have been 59 other major countries around the world that have had women leaders before us. Welcome to the party. Or we will have Donald Trump. And
we'll have a peaceful transition of power.
Oh, yeah.
Whether they like it or not.
But that's unique, too.
It's incredibly unique. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we ought to be proud of that as well. So anyway, today, the election special, we're going to go through the state politics of it, the presidential race, and obviously everything related to Congress as well. Let me start, Pat, with the Kirk Duckworth race. Mark Kirk has been trailing. There were a couple of debates that, people seem to toss to Duckworth fairly quickly. What's the status?
I think it's still somewhat close, but you got to remember, in Illinois, in this Senate race and the Illinois House races, Republicans in presidential years in a blue state faced gale force headwinds to win any kind of races. It's as very difficult as a Republican to win. We saw it in 2012. In 2010, we had a tremendous year when Senator Kirk won. We picked up six House seats. Bill Brady almost won up and races up and down the ballot. And in 2012, we lost it all because it's just the turnout model is different here. So it's tough for any Republican to win. I don't know where it is. All I know is I've been working with Senator Kirk for 12, 14 years, and they always say he's going to lose. He ends up winning.
Right. But it's probably heavily turnout dependent, right?
Yeah, as everything. And he's usually very good in the suburbs, and he gets big turnout there, and that's where he wins.
So that's one thing to keep an eye on today. What does that mean? Because it's one of the, I think there's eight key races in the Senate that could swing it one way or another. What does it mean nationally as you look around the country with these key Senate races, Kelly Ayotte in various places?
Yeah, Kelly Ayotte, I think what overall, without going into each of them, Trump kind of catching up in the last week because of the first or the second Comey statement helped Republicans. Kelly Ayotte right now is in dead heat in New Hampshire. Pat Toomey is actually up today in the morning poll. Ron Johnson, Wisconsin, the Republicans actually up. All these people were down early on. So there's an outside chance, I think maybe even better than outside chance, the Republicans can hold the Senate, which would be a huge development. But there's been a lot of split ticket voting.
One of the greatest things about the country, of course, checks and balances. I get that. But if Hillary Clinton wins and the power of Congress is Republican, will we get anything done? Will we have a new Supreme Court justice? Will that be blocked? Will we get anything done in at least the next 2 years?
Well, the most in my lifetime, one of the most productive periods was in 1994 after the Clintons, President Bill Clinton, they had the House and the Senate, like, which they lost badly in the 94 election. And the Republicans actually came up with a contract with America, came up with an agenda, contract with America, and we got a lot done. Well,
but the difference was compromise. Yeah.
Yes, and that was my second point. These districts now are so gerrymandered that it doesn't really help you politically to compromise. You're better off to stand to the right or to the left, depending if you're Republican or Democrat, and compromise doesn't necessarily do you a lot of good when it comes to getting reelected. So we'll see. But it's kind of up to her. She's going to drive the agenda. Is she going to answer to the Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren wing of the Senate and go left? If she does that, she's going to have problems, and she'll probably have problems in the midterms. But if she tries to go to the middle, which I've read some analysis of what she might try to do, and to me this idea is very appealing, a giant infrastructure bill, which appeals to all sides. It's what the country badly needs, and it's not just roads and bridges. It's actually healthcare infrastructure for working moms and things like that. So if she does that, does something common sense, I mean, she's going to have to hit some singles. She's not going to be able to do Obamacare 2 or some big grand entitlement. It's going to have to be singles. It's going to have to be things that people, Republicans, can live with. And Paul Ryan's probably got the toughest job in the United States.
And I will say this, and we'll get into more of this later. If the Republican Party wants to finish the deal and put a nail in their own coffin, block the Supreme Court with no good reason, and be the obstructionist party and continue to not reach out to Hispanics and blacks and do all the things that that Ryan's previous said we had to do in 2012 and didn't do.
Yeah, it was part of that process writing that autopsy. And we've had a nominee, unfortunately, here that has insulted the fastest growing voting blocks, the Hispanics, the Asians, African Americans. It's not 1980 anymore. The electorate's changed, and we need to, I agree completely, Steve, Republicans, if they want to recover from this disaster of Trump, need to do just what you said.
The new Republican Party. It's the only shot. Otherwise, it's over.
It is, but it can happen because we have good young leadership. We have a good bench. We need to get back to being the party of ideas and the party that helps people with their problems. And it's just not 1980 anymore. We can't run on tax cuts for corporations. That just doesn't sell anymore.
I'm Ryan Burrow live in Florida, one of the key states to watch tonight. And they'll be wrapping that up early, of course, in Florida. There isn't enough wacky to detail. But, you know, anything can happen in Florida. Anything. Anything.
Yes.
You'll be leaving for New York about 9:30 this morning.
I will. I'm going to be heading over there, and
are you going to like toggle between Javits and Trump?
They're only a few blocks away.
Yeah,
can you believe that?
But the Trump Tower, is that where they're going to be?
No, it's a hotel. It's a hotel. Yeah, it is the Hilton. It's a hotel right. But it's not too far from.
Is that
Trump
one of his
Tower
hotels?
Downtown.
I don't know.
I don't
but
think
the
it
security.
Is.
What do you get a rate? 619 traffic.
You get it on
come
points.
To the rally, get a room.
Use his points.
All right.
Melania, how many points do we have?
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
The election is rigged. It's rigged like you've never seen before. It's all rigged. It's all rigged.
Well, I can reassure Donald Trump, I am in charge of elections in Ohio, and they're not going to be rigged. I'll make sure of that.
It's an insult to American voters, and it's an insult to county registrars to say that America doesn't know how to run an election. We know how to run an election. And this is clearly a guy who feels like he's losing.
There is no serious person out there who would suggest somehow that you could even rig America's elections. And so I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
625, if you are concerned about that today, don't be. I just ask you to be logical and consider the fact that if you think there is some sort of system rigging against the Republicans, well, then none of the Republicans around the country would win. We wouldn't have any Republicans in office. And again, I've brought this up before, but if the media is in the tank for Hillary Clinton, how do you know about the email scandal? Reported by the New York Times, allegedly the most liberal paper in the country. So you got to take a deep breath, take a step back, and do what's right for you and what's right for your neighborhood and what's right for your country. get out and vote. We got some questions about the Electoral College coming up. Pat's going to go over the full history and explain it in just a second. First, Ryan Burroughs live in Florida. Where in Florida, Ryan?
Morning, guys. It's a sunny, warm day here in Miami.
Well, I would hope
seen
so.
Some people going in. Yeah, it's already seen some people going in. Line was about a dozen deep. Hey, this is kind of bizarre, though, because about half of the people here in Florida have early voted. So as a result, really, the pressure isn't on today, especially with the campaigns. I was asking, I was at both the Trump and Clinton campaign offices in Miami yesterday, and I'm like, so what's your day look like tomorrow? And they said, you know, we're going to canvass, we're going to do the best we can, but let's face it, half the people have already voted, so the pressure really isn't on like it's been in years prior.
And of the folks that are in line early, I know it's not a lot, but what age range are you looking at?
Middle age, kind of in a condo complex area right now. So, you know, a lot of people getting their ballots in, getting it cast before they head on off to work.
Ryan, I don't know if you've done any of your own unofficial exit polling, but any indication as to who has who's the candidate being voted for most often at this point? I know it's very early.
Well, yeah, from where I'm at, this is a hardworking area here. It looks like a lot of Cuban Americans are the people that I've spoken to at this point. A couple people with Make America Great Again hats. You know, it's really hard to tell at this point. And, you know, it's hard to tell with the polling in this state. Look, from what we've seen so far, maybe Hillary Clinton has a narrow lead, but everything's been within the margin of error. So to determine at this point what this state, which way it's going to go, I mean, it's just really, really difficult. We know she had a lot of success with early voting. We know that President Obama had a lot of success with early voting in 2012 and only managed to win by less than a percentage point. So, you know, it's possible that the people who come out and vote today are the you know, Trump supporters who kind of held back a little bit, and now their surge begins. We'll just have to see. But this is going to be a key state for Donald Trump if he plans to hit 270. That's for sure. I don't really know too many pathways for him without this state.
Polls close at 7?
Correct, here in Florida, yes.
And again, we may have an issue with lines because if early voting's any indication, certainly had it in the city last night here, where if you got a line around the block and people trying to get in at 7 o'clock, that would delay the results from some of these East Coast states that we expect to come in early. Ryan out there for ABC News and for us, and we'll check back with him as time allows this morning. All right, in short, Pat, the Electoral College, we had a couple of textures going, why should I vote when the Electoral College decides the president? It does, but it's a checks and balances system.
It goes back to the Constitutional Convention when a small group of people actually control things, kind of like Illinois now. But
right, Mike Madigan was actually in charge of the Electoral College at one point.
The popular vote determines where the Electoral College is supposed to go. It's a couple weeks after the election they actually cast the electoral votes. You can be chosen to be an elector. It's you get two for each senator you have in the state, and then whatever number of congressmen you have. So there's 29 in Florida, 4 in New Hampshire. And then you need two.
You got a minimum of 3 because of states like Wyoming that have one congressman.
Exactly. And you need 270 electoral votes to win. So all the while during the course of this campaign, we've been talking about these polls that are national polls, which are important because they're trend indicators. You need to really focus on the state-by-state polls to see where the Electoral College is going. That's where you come up with the term of battleground states that are within the margin or states where we're not sure who's going to win. So it's a historic has historic roots since the Constitutional Convention. There are a lot of people right now. I was on a committee who are trying to get rid of it.
Well, I understand that, but the whether or not you want to get rid of it is a longer argument, and it may not even happen in our lifetimes. But there are two things to remember here. One is, yes, the popular vote almost always, 2000 being an exception.
There were 4 times.
Drives the Electoral College vote. The electors are bound by law in most states to vote in line with the popular vote for their states. There's exceptions in Nebraska and in Maine. But in addition to that, every race, and we keep harping on this, but Congress affects your life more every day than anything the president does, except for the super big picture stuff. And the congressional votes are not subject to the Electoral College, as is nothing else. It gets the farther down you get in the ballot, the closer it gets to your house.
Well, that's why they do, historically, you do 2-year terms in the Congress, because they wanted them to be more responsive to the people versus
right.
the Senate, that they wanted to be more of a deliberative body. That's why Congress has tax and spend authority. House.
Right. I love prognosticating. I love, you know, guessing which state will go which way, especially the swings. But I heard someone at ABC yesterday say that whoever wins Florida, if Hillary wins Florida, that's it.
Yeah, and that's true. You can go on Real Clear Politics right now and punch up an electoral map, yeah. And you can do it sitting at your laptop, and it can show you exactly where this race goes. And we could know if Florida closes early, or the results are put out early, or are called early. If he loses, Trump loses Florida, Hillary's president. He has to win Florida, Ohio, North Carolina, and pick up a Midwest state to win this. He virtually has to draw an inside straight, if you believe the polls, to win this thing.
But for Trump people who are going, well, why should I vote then? In 2000, George Bush had a 3-point lead, about what Hillary has in most polls, going into Election Day, and he lost the popular vote. Your vote matters. That's the bottom
absolutely
line.
Does.
Your vote matters.
Absolutely.
It says 6:31. Big story next, 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show presents The Kid of the Week.
God bless the child.
A little different Kid of the Week this morning. We're going to give you an update on how a kid's doing. It's all sponsored by Ray and Raymond Chevrolet. And as we continue with the election special, we'll talk to Pat Brady in a few minutes about the Safe Roads Amendment, which everybody's got to make a decision on today as well. And what he thinks of that. Kid of the Week is where we celebrate kids doing great stuff, overcoming things, fighting to overcome things. And in December, we choose a Kid of the Year. When I say we, I mean Mary and Dave. And they will lock themselves in a room, and at some point, candy cane-colored smoke will come out of a chimney, and we'll know that a decision has been made on Kid of the Year. The 2016 Kid of the Year gets a $5,000 prize courtesy of Ray Chevy in Fox Lake and Raymond Chevy in Antioch. See the full inventory at rayandraymonddeals.com and enter a Kid of the Week you know, love, or have just heard about at WGNradio.com/contest. That's how you submit your entry. You guys remember Samantha Crump?
Oh, yeah. How is she?
She's doing pretty great. We're going to talk to her in just a second, and she has a fundraiser coming up. But this is an amazing kid dealing with cancer who is fighting her way through it and in the process helping other kids as well. And we got as much response to Samantha's story as we ever have for any Kid of the Week. And she was nice enough to rejoin us now. Samantha, I know you're busy. Thanks for taking our call.
Hi, good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. You know, one of the things that really is aggravating about, being a kid with a serious illness is you miss out on a lot of stuff. But I just heard good news. You didn't miss prom.
Homecoming. I went to homecoming.
Or homecoming. Sorry. Well, you know what? It's the fall version of prom. I heard a homecoming. How cool is that?
It was really fun. I got to go with all my friends.
That's excellent. I was very excited to hear that for you.
Thank you.
And how are you feeling?
Pretty good.
All right. Well, let's go backwards now and retell your story so people know in case they missed it the first time. You're dealing with what kind of cancer?
Non-Hodgkin lymphoma.
And how old were you when you were diagnosed?
Well, I was diagnosed this year, but I had a different type of lymphoma when I was 6 years old.
Okay.
But this year is when it kind of started getting bad. So in February, I was diagnosed with, because I had a tumor on my leg.
Okay.
And then I started chemotherapy in about, I want to say, April or May. And then after that, I had to get a stem cell transplant, which I had that in the summer. Then I got radiation, and now I'm recovering or in remission.
And what are your doctors telling you?
Well, a couple weeks ago, I went there, and they said that I had a clear scan because I had to get a PET scan. So far, there's no activity.
Okay, you're getting a sitting ovation. It's very exciting. It's very exciting. And, how was the homecoming dance?
That was a lot of fun. I got to see all my friends and then everyone from school that I haven't been able to see and all my teachers. I was able to see them, so...
Steve, you forgot the most important question for her. Talk about your dress. What color was it? Yeah, matching shoes and everything?
It was just a black dress. I actually borrowed it from my friend, and I had black sparkly pumps, I guess.
Ooh, sounds beautiful.
I was going to get to the black sparkly pumps, obviously.
And how about your hair? Did you have an updo, or did you wear it down?
Well, I don't have hair, so...
But you were styling the entire time.
Yep.
You were crushing it when you came in there.
Yeah.
Well, look, congratulations on the medical track, obviously, but in the homecoming dance. But your work continues because one of the things that's very, very cool about Samantha in the middle of dealing with all this issues, how she helps other people. And everybody wants to give back to you, Sammy. So Sammy Strong, a fundraiser in support of the Crum family, is coming up on November 18th at Calvin's Public House, 5901 West Lawrence Avenue in Chicago. And, you know, your family's been through a lot. You've been through a lot. And, you know, we deserve to be on the other side of this in every way, shape, or form. So if anybody can help, you can also go to Facebook and just search Crump Family Friends, C-R-U-M-P, Family Friends. And Sammy's story is there as well.
And congratulations, too. We know the Cubs are your favorite team. You probably were very excited about the Cubs. And your favorite player?
Yeah, I was excited. And my favorite player is Rizzo, yeah. Anthony Rizzo.
Yeah, he had a lot of challenges, too, that he overcame.
Yeah. When he was 18, he was diagnosed with cancer, too. So.
Well, there you go. Cancer buddy. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything autographed by Anthony Rizzo?
Unfortunately, I don't, but...
All right, well, Dave?
Yeah, we got to work on that.
Dave Bennett, work on that.
Dave Bennett will go to work on getting you something from Anthony Rizzo. I would suggest, Sammy, you know, you got a lot of expenses coming up, college, different things. Probably going to need a car. Maybe get a check autographed by Anthony Rizzo because he's doing very well.
That might be good. Pretty nice.
Mom's going, no, no.
Well, that's the best of both worlds. You get the collectible and you get the check.
That's right.
If you go to Facebook, you'll see some great photos and also the Bare Necessities Cancer Walk, which you volunteered for, right?
Yeah, that was on October 23rd.
Well, you got quite a life going, kid, and nicely done by you. Keep up the good work. Stay healthy. Listen to your doctors. Blah, blah, blah. All you hear from everybody all day long. I'm just pulling for you. I want you to know that.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for giving us an update, and hold the line.
She's great, isn't she? How cool. She got to go to the dance.
Let me just ask you a question now.
Okay, yes.
You listen to Sammy, right?
Yes.
I mean, you don't have the energy to go vote today?
Oh, my gosh.
You don't have the, you know, it's too much going on in your world to go out and exercise your privilege to vote today?
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Please.
All right, 6:55, and Pat Brady is with us for as long as he's willing to stay this morning. Chuck Todd will be on after 7. Nick Zitzen, one of my old friends, live from Philadelphia, big muckety-muck in the corporate world now. And Philadelphia is going to play a big role tonight, especially if it's a close race. Bridget Gaynor. Is Bridget coming in or is she on the phone? She'll be on the phone because she doesn't like us.
No, Bridget does like us? She does, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Cook County, one of the Cook County commissioners.
The busy day.
David Orr later and former Republican leader Tom Cross. Well, send as many texts as possible and phone calls as well on Election Day. 312-981-7200, the number for both of those. On everybody's ballot, they're going to see the Safe Roads Amendment, which I think is called the Transportation Lockbox. Is that, like a tribute to Al Gore?
Exactly. So I've got to say it like him. Basically what it does, constitutional amendment requiring them, doesn't allow state or local units of government to use revenue funding for anything but revenue. Just a way to lock it up.
Now, so if money is designated for transportation, it has to be spent on roads, bridges, and transportation issues.
Exactly. That's and it sounds great. A lot of the editorial boards thought not. They thought this was a boondoggle for contractors who would now have a constitutionally protected right to these funds that are these revenue funds. I don't know. I guess you got to make a decision. Do you trust the legislature to spend the money like they're supposed to?
No.
Or should the Constitution dictate what they do?
Read up on that one because I did read up on it before, and it's a lengthy explanation on the ballot.
It's very long on the
ballot. It's a very long explanation, and you have to. That's the one you have to research.
If you vote yes, it means you'd like the money to be locked in for transportation.
Correct.
Yes.
That's exactly how I read it, yes.
All right. Now, here's the pro and the cons. The pro is... the state government has shown no responsibility in spending money. Everybody remember how all the toll money was going to go to education, how all the lottery money was going to go to education.
And the tolls were going to come down when the roads were paid off.
Yeah, that all worked out.
Supposed to be paid off in 1973. Yeah. Is that right?
So I don't trust Springfield to do the right thing. We know we have massive infrastructure problems, and I think this is a good thing. In regards to the argument, and both, by the way. Both editorial boards, I think maybe even the Daily Herald as well, all said no to this. They didn't like it. But my point is, if you don't trust them, this is the only option. And secondarily, the idea that there'd be some sort of price fixing going on and contractors would make out here. Well, these contracts are supposed to be public domain. And we're supposed to find out what people are paying to have the right to make state money.
Exactly. I think the other con argument is unintended consequences, like we have in our Constitution, that requires you can't diminish pension benefits. And if we set up another restriction on the legislature, this might have unintended consequences down the road, and just ask the legislature to do their job, and you don't have to have things like this. I'm not saying either way, but that's what the arguments are.
Is it called a lockbox? So they is it called a lockbox though? So the funds are just used for that instead of, say, maybe pork projects by the lawmakers.
It has to be specifically related to transportation.
Because I think that's where people think, oh, I don't want that money going for that.
Depending on your definition of pork, everything's pork. But this just means you need to spend it on transportation.
In a
transportation pork.
Yeah. Put it in a lockbox.
The Steve Cochran Show.
He is temperamentally unfit to hold an office that requires knowledge, stability, and immense responsibility.
No, you
are, but what am I?
He's really pretty close to unhinged, and you've seen it. You've seen it a couple of times.
No, you are, but what am I?
He's a loose cannon. I mean, he's somebody who has said so many things.
No, you are, but what am I?
Crooked Hillary. Crooked Hillary, Father.
No, you are, but what am I?
I think he's the donkey of the decade.
No, you are, but what am I, Infinity? No, I'm not. You are.
She's the devil. He made a deal with the devil. True.
Aren't you going to miss it? Come on, you know you're going to miss it. It's Election Day, kids, 7-Eleven. Friend of the program, Cook County Commissioner Bridget Gaynor joins us. Good morning, Bridget. How are you?
Morning. I'm great. How are you?
I'm fine. Pat Brady's here. Andrea's here. Dave's here.
Good.
Mary's here. We just called to say hi.
No, I just left my precinct. Lines out the door.
Good.
So huge lines this morning everywhere. So we'll see.
Yeah, I had to. I had a schedule change and had to vote yesterday afternoon. Had an hour wait, and that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. So I think we're looking at big turnout.
I think so too. You know, it's not like nobody has a weak opinion about this one. So you know, it's I think it'll be good.
Cook County, anything?
What do you think, Pat?
Yeah, Pat, what do you think?
I think that if Donald Trump does win, that Mr. Cocker and I are going to have to move to Ecuador.
Well, we got a nice place on the beach.
We've been dinging on him.
Don't
for
we know the president?
Long
yeah.
time.
Yeah, we can call the president.
We have an in.
Hey, look, if he hit Julian Assange, he'll take us in.
Yeah.
What?
I mean, you're smarter than all those people who say they're going to Canada. That's a better move. Better weather.
Yeah, so. You have the earthquake danger, but at least you'll be warm.
Better golf.
And all right, so Cook County specifically, what Cook County ballots are we on Cook County ballots? What are we looking at?
So Kim Fox is on the ballot for Kim Fox and a guy named Panush for state's attorney. So kind of a foregone conclusion there. Kim looks like she'll probably do pretty well. And then you got, I mean, it's interesting because with Susana Mendoza, Hillary, Kim Fox, Sammy Tuckley, you got a lot of women on that ballot, which will be, you know, we'll see how we end up there, but. Big day.
It's even beyond. I mean, the
and
Democrats have
all the judges, which, you know, you got to pull something out of the paper because as much as it's kind of a slog, they're so important.
Well, yeah, go to Ballot Ready, ballotready.org.
Yeah.
10 minutes or less, you will have your entire ballot. You can print it out and literally walk up and knock out your votes and feel good about the fact that you did some research.
No, that's good. And, you know, I forgot, the Water Reclamation District, also sometimes kind of tough, but you got a bunch of good candidates, Marty Durkin, Mariana Spiropoulos, Barbara McGowan, Josefina Morita. I mean, there's a bunch of people on that ballot, you know, so.
It's an important job.
There's a referendum on the Cook County Recorder of Deeds. Should we collapse that office into the clerk's office and do some consolidation? And, you know, there's always been this talk that there's all these different Cook County offices that deal with taxes. And at some point, you got to start consolidating some of these offices or you're never going to, you know, you're always going to be in a situation where we're going to have to raise taxes. So that was put out there by John Fritchie. And I think it's a good, vote.
Because yes.
I think it can be consolidated, but still do a good job.
I don't ever remember a ballot where the race for controller or comptroller, however you choose to say it, was so contentious. Leslie Munger and Susana Mendoza. Boy, I think I've seen more commercials for that race than maybe second only to Trump and Hillary.
Well, Madigan spent a lot of money.
Yeah.
Well, so did Rauner. I mean, I think this race has been more expensive than some prior races we've had for governor.
Right.
So it's, you know, I think what we're seeing all over the state is this proxy war. I mean, some of the ads for these state rep candidates, I don't know if you guys have seen them. They're crazy. You think that half the Illinois House is a friend of rapists. You know, it's nuts.
Yeah, well, it depends on the candidate. Yeah, that's why you have to do your research. That's a different website. And by the way, the Mike Madigan list that I talked about yesterday with my eight select candidates who are too close to Mike Madigan, you can still get that at WGNRadio.com and the WGN Radio app. So where do you spend election night waiting for results to come in?
Well, you know, like all good junkies, I like to, you know, be home in my sweats with my own remote control and, you know, between the Board of Elections computer and the TV. Tonight, we'll see. You know, I think I'll be out of my polling place, so at least, or my precinct, till about 7, because I think it's going to be crowded again. But there's a bunch of, there's actually a party at that ping pong place, Ace Bounce. So, you know, I don't know how ping pong and elections go, but maybe it's a new combo.
No, there's nothing better than watching a bunch of drunks play ping pong. Hey, where's the ball?
I think maybe that's a metaphor for this election.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
So yeah, drunken ping pong players.
Right.
Bridget Gaynor, thanks, we love having you on. Hold the line, if you would. Chuck Todd's coming up.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I was really impressed when everybody's hand went up saying you'd already vote. Well, go find somebody else who hasn't voted, okay? Bring out your friends, your roommates. And, you know, between now and the time the poll closes tomorrow, we are going to be living on a prayer.
Don't. Please don't.
It's Bon Jovi.
No, don't. I'm telling you, Secret Service, every time candidates try to be funny, Secret Service should throw themselves on the candidate. 7:21. Text line 302-981-7200. Somebody just texted, is CNN projected a winner yet? Chuck Todd joins us now. Wolf's ready. We know that, Chuck. Wolf is standing by right now.
Developing now. I love Wolf. Don't get
me too.
Get in trouble. No network on network crime here, buddy.
No. I love Wolf as well. But if Wolf saw a light across the street, he'd run across traffic to get on front of a TV camera. He loves it, and good for him. Good for him. And still does great work. Anyway, turnout for early voting has been huge. Will it be huge today?
You know, I have had my doubts that turnout was going to be up, but boy, the early vote, the anecdotal, I guess it is going to be slightly higher than, you know, maybe we're looking at 140 million voters. That's when you have two extraordinarily unpopular candidates and people so demoralized about an election, on one hand, you would think it would be a down election, but there's been, you know, when you have two campaigns running on fear, right, where they basically say if you elect the other one, the apocalypse is coming. When you put it in those terms, you do galvanize your base, and I do think we're seeing some evidence that frankly, both bases are pretty galvanized.
And you would think that with the natural drop in the African-American vote without Barack Obama as a candidate this time mm-hmm. around, that would concern Democrats, because if more folks are coming out, I would be a Democrat right. making the assumption that maybe they're angry white folks who are coming out in support of Trump. You know, and this is just not just hype to encourage people to vote. You got to get out there no matter who you support.
Well, and look, and I think it'll be interesting to see. I think if Clinton wins, it'll be a different coalition of voters. I think and what's interesting is the difference between the North and the South and the battleground in these Sunbelt states. The rising Hispanic electorate can make up, and the turnout so far, if you look at some of the early vote, including in places like Georgia and North Carolina, which have growing Hispanic populations, not just Florida and Arizona and Nevada, which we've been talking about more, that can replace the African-American, you know, downturn a little bit in those states. Where it's more crucial for her is in the northern states, where there isn't a large Hispanic vote yet in a Michigan or a Pennsylvania or a Wisconsin or Iowa, for instance, or Ohio. So she's struggling in those places because she needs a higher African-American turnout, and he's doing better with union Democrats, right? So that combination, look, we could see an unusual map tonight. It wouldn't shut. It is not implausible to me that she wins North Carolina, Florida, and Arizona, gets really close in Georgia, but loses Michigan, Iowa, and Ohio, right? Which would just be to me, a geographic, which would underscore the power of the Hispanic vote.
Chuck, I was watching Pat Breed. I was watching you yesterday, and you made a great point, I thought, in kind of the what if the Republicans had nominated that could actually have had a message that worked in those states you just talked about, what the difference might have been.
Look, Trump, this is actually unique. You could actually make an argument that Trump was a unique figure in possibly having an ability to put the Rust Belt in play. They didn't do it, right? I mean, they actually had a guy who had a message, right, on that was speaking to these voters. The Michigan thing is such a head-scratcher. What's funny about that is, so the Clinton campaign always had a ground team on there, but they were not advertising there, less because they were nervous about it, or less because they were so confident of it, and more, which is one of those, well, if the minute Trump went in, they were going to go in. But he never did. And then, you know, I think we may look back, and when we see a three-point result in her favor, we'll say, boy, what if he had spent more time there?
Chuck, what would be the biggest surprise for you to see tonight?
The biggest surprise, if Trump pulls off of Virginia or Colorado, that would be a shocker, and then that would tell us, boy, Katie bar the door. We've got major polling problems. We've got major assumption problems. All that stuff. Based on what we're seeing, if what we're seeing is reality, and I'm of 85% confidence on that, but if what we're seeing in the polls is reality, my surprise tonight would be Georgia for her. That if there was an upset tonight, it would be Georgia.
And 2 years ago when this all began, we thought Hillary versus Jeb, Hillary versus Marco Rubio. We thought that there'd be a campaign based on the history of a first woman running. And this is the crazy part, Chuck. We thought we'd hear about issues. And here we are.
Election Marco Rubio. Let's consider this, guys. There is one Republican who ran for president that is, I think, guaranteed to make a victory speech tonight. And it's Marco Rubio.
Yeah, that's right. Well put. All right, now
it's something to think about tonight. And I'll tell you, if you're Marco Rubio and you win Florida and she wins Florida, it might be the perfect result.
Decision night in America tonight, 6 o'clock Chicago time. Chuck Todd, Savannah Guthrie, Lester Holt, and the great Tom Brokaw. It's hashtag Decision 2016. As always, Chuck, we appreciate your time. I know it's a crazy busy day. And the news story starts tomorrow.
Right, Pat? Come on, man.
Love it. No, it's Super Bowl. Super Bowl day for us, right?
Yeah, it's fun.
There you go.
It's fun. This is America, baby. Go vote. Thanks, Chuck.
It's America. Go vote.
See you later. 727 back with the big story in a couple of minutes and some more of your texts on 720 WGN. Yeah, that's where I work.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
We're doing very, very well in Pennsylvania. Very well. You watch what's going to happen in Pennsylvania. The miners are going to come out. The workers are going to come out. The steel workers who lost their jobs are coming out. By the way, lots of people surrounding Philadelphia are going to come out and they're voting because they want to vote. And you know who's going to come out? The women are going to come out. You watch. The women. The women are going to come out big.
7:43 now. Nick Zitzen is in line in the suburbs of Philadelphia. Trump referred to it there. And Pat, before we go to Nick, we know that in 2012, Romney was in basically a dead heat going into the final days and the final weekend. But the northernmost tip of Virginia, and I think it was Cuyahoga County outside of Cleveland or in Ohio, tipped the scales and won the election for Obama. It was not the electoral blowout that it appeared to be. It's just the math worked out that way. Point being, counties matter,
sure.
Suburbs matter, right?
And particularly in this race, if Trump does not win Pennsylvania, it's over, and suburban Philadelphia is key.
And our friend Nick Zitzen joins us now. Good morning, Nick. You're in line now?
Steve, he's right about one thing. They turned out. This is the longest line I've seen in the 4 years I voted in this precinct. It's unbelievable.
So you are, what, halfway through the line? Where are you in line now?
So I've been waiting for 45 minutes so far, and I'm now actually inside the physical structure, and I'd say I've got another 15, 20 minutes left to go.
Wow. Wow. See, I think this is a good sign. I think heavy turnout is a good sign, and it appears that we're going to have it. Now, we are getting reports from various places in Chicago that it's pretty light.
Yes, depending on where you are.
Okay. All right, Nick, so give people an explanation about why the Philadelphia suburbs are a constant part of this conversation.
Well, Steve, it's not unlike Chicago, right? I mean, the suburbs surrounding Philadelphia tend to be middle to upper middle class. The split down the middle, I'd say, of conservative Democrats and left-leaning Republicans. It's a good bellwether. And I just in informal surveys I've taken walking through the line, just about the only thing that unifies this group is that most people are happy that the Cubs won the World Series. I mean, they're literally, there's some Trump supporters here. There's a lot of Hillary supporters. The local races are pretty hotly contested. I think this is a great sign that people actually take this election seriously, and I hope the lines keep up.
Do you have any indication from, local polling, anecdotally, that this goes Trump or Hillary's way, one way or the other?
You know, it's interesting. You would think, based on the approach that most of these people seem to take in their politics, that it would be, I'd say, 60-40 Hillary. But there's a lot of what I call pocketbook voters here, Steve. A lot of people who, are very closely monitoring tax policy because it's going to directly affect their own personal bottom line. And those people are saying that they're going to vote for Trump. They're looking past what they see as his flaws as a candidate, and they're more interested in preserving a low tax rate. So I think it's really hard to tell. If I had to guess, I'd say it's 55-45 Hillary, based on the informal polling I've done of the people online.
Hey, Nick, like Illinois, Pennsylvania, it's just about math and numbers, and you have the Democrats promising Bob Brady, the congressman there, that he's going to deliver a 400,000 vote margin coming out of Philadelphia. Is that overcomable, if that's a word, by Trump in the suburbs and the rest of the state?
I don't think so. I mean, this is a constant tug of war between sort of the Pittsburgh segment of the Pennsylvania vote and the Philadelphia segment. I mean, the fact that they don't have early voting here makes it really hard, to judge where the momentum is. But I got to tell you, Pat, my sense is from talking to people in line who have relatives that live in the city of Philadelphia, the turnout there, I'm told, is very strong. And you know who that benefits. So I don't think if they deliver that kind of a margin, I don't think that's overcomable.
Nick, both candidates were there yesterday. We saw Trump earlier and then Hillary at night with the backdrop of, I think she was by Independence Hall, right by the Liberty Bell. Is there any indication that swayed someone either way, or is it at that point the Hillary supporters are with Hillary, the Trump supporters are with Trump?
You know, Andrea, it's funny. I think that by now it's mostly baked. I mean, I've talked to a couple people who honestly aren't sure, but even the ones that aren't sure weren't going to be swayed by sort of last-minute campaigning. This is the one thing you'll have to be thankful for in Illinois. Every single TV commercial in this state is one of a series of five ads. I mean, you literally know them all by heart now. They're running so many of them. So I think people are burned out on the advertising. I think they're burned out on the campaigning. They've heard the stump speeches. Most people now are just sort of debating, amongst family members and friends and trying to figure out who to vote for. But I don't think anything the candidates do at this point is going to sway them one way or the other.
You know, we can pick this conversation up, tomorrow, next week, and beyond. But one of the things, regardless of who wins, is what happens tomorrow morning and what happens Thursday and beyond. There's a lot of doomsday out there about the fracture that's been created in this country, and it's just going to get worse regardless of who wins. I'm a little sappy when it comes to this stuff, but I kind of go back to the good in America will always outweigh the bad. You're an optimist, Nick. Pat, you generally are as well. So where are you guys on that idea?
Well, Steve, I've said this to a number of people on both sides. In this country, you don't get to throw your hands up the day after the election if it doesn't go your way. If he wins, then people who were for her and who think he's the worst, they're going to have to figure out a way to be active citizens and make it work. And if you're for him and she wins, don't go around complaining that the election was rigged. Stand up, get involved in the local process. It's the same thing you and I have sung about for years now. This country is only a great country because people take it seriously and people stay involved. So this election may end, but the obligations of anybody who's interested in what the election stands for continues.
I agree. It's a great country, great people, and we're always at our best when we think we're going to be at our worst. The thing that really irritated me, though, about this campaign was Trump actually trying to question the legitimacy of the election, the institutions of our government. This is a hallmark of democracy, is this election, the peaceful transition of power. And to question that can really do a lot of damage to the democracy, in my opinion.
But again, you got to stop. People will hear what they want to hear, and they stop listening, right? It's one of the great problems with the world we live in today. Having said that, just the logic, just common sense, people, please take it to the next step. The election's not rigged because Republicans will win all over the country today. And the media isn't involved in some scam because the only reason you know about Hillary Clinton being a liar is because of the media.
Exactly.
So explain to me where the fix is.
There is no fix. But and I said this all along. I have a lot more faith in the intellect of the voters, the people that are actually working every day to come out and wait for 2 hours to vote in their judgment than I do maybe some of these candidates.
Nick, thanks. Don't get in trouble in line. But if anything fun happens, do call us and... And you got to do something about that Carson Wentz situation. You got more quarterback troubles than the Bears do.
You know I'm a Patriots fan, Steve, but we'll do.
Oh, by the way, I'll leave you on that. Did you see that Trump said Brady voted for him, and Brady said, I haven't voted yet?
Just add it to the list. Add it to the list.
Can't help himself. Thank you, my friend, Nick Zitzen. Nick is a guy very active in politics, worked for Mitt Romney. And then came here, ran some businesses here, and now is a muckety-muck. That's actually on his business card with SAP, little communications company, or a little IT company, I should say, with a worldwide footprint. He's a guy, though. Nick can't be more than 36, 37. That's the future of the Republican Party, guys like him.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the future's for both, like you said, there's going to have to be some agreement here, but why don't we just get back to a fact-based analysis? These are the facts. We need to get these things fixed, and let's come up with some solutions. And I think there are people that want that, and there are people that are elected officials that are willing to do it.
And speaking of facts, we got to go to traffic here. But do you know one of the, and I'm not kidding at all about this, one of the absolute number one job growth areas in media, whether it's specific media, net media, or whatever's left of mass media, fact checker. Mm-hmm. Because everybody that does news will now have to employ a fact checker.
That's right.
Because people from Newt Gingrich to Trump to a bunch of Democrats as well all went, I said it, it's out there.
Right. And especially
when there's no honor left, there's no honor left and no concern for the truth, you got to have a fact checker who will actually go to the extra effort to show what's true and what isn't true.
And especially in this day of social media and the internet, just because you read, we say this all the time, just because you see something on the internet doesn't always mean it's true.
But look at Trump, and we could give other examples of Hillary Clinton doing the same thing to make the statement that Tom Brady voted for me, and Tom Brady says, I haven't even, you're up on, ridiculous. Would you ever think in your brain that I'm going to say something like that I know is a lie ridiculous. In front of 10 million people? It just, yeah. I don't know why you think that works.
He's a special kind of crazy. Couple of texts here. There's no way to use a computer for voting without creating election fraud from an IT professional of over 25 years.
Okay, but let me ask this. If that is the case, then how are we able to online bank, transfer money?
I think there's that yeah.
I mean, any obviously. System, anything is never going to be fully firewalled or fully foolproof. Nothing in life is. But this would be a start, I think.
Somebody else says we have to stop voting on Tuesdays because people need to be able to have an opportunity to vote when it's not Tuesday. Well, that's what early voting is. You know, early voting is an opportunity to do that. But moving it off Tuesday, you know, Tuesday is daylight savings time. There's no reason that you could move Election Day to a Saturday next year if you had the political will to do it. Right? Am I right or am I right?
You're right. In fact, the election dates themselves are moved all the time. They moved up our primary in February, yeah. So Barack Obama could win Illinois early.
Remember that? Yeah.
Steve, my writing candidate is Boris Badenov. Well, he's Russian, so that doesn't surprise me. Boris Badenov.
Natasha.
Yeah. Natasha would be first lady. Yeah.
Rocky Squirrel Moose.
Okay, now you're starting to frighten me.
We're the same age. You watch the same cartoons.
Yes, I did. 309. Can we start talking about when our state legislature might get back to work on a budget? When does a temporary budget run out?
End of the year, doesn't it?
Yeah, but there's a veto session coming up next week, and then the next battle will be the budget going forward. I think it ends in January, the stopgap.
They still have a couple of weeks until they, you know, they haven't been in
session. Until they start faking panic where they have to go in.
Well, that's why this election, the results are very important here in Illinois, in the Illinois House and Senate, to see if there is any change in the balance of powers. The Speaker going to lose a supermajority.
And again, we'll give you the Madigan list maybe before 10 one more time. Dean's coming up. David Orr's coming up. Coach Q's coming up. And former Republican leader Tom Cross as well, all before 10. Text us 312-981-7200. And we're back after this on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood, you know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood, well, kiss me good.
All right, 8:13 now. And we'll give you the Madigan list again for those of you who have asked for it and missed it. Yesterday, you can get it at on Twitter and at Facebook as well. Facebook is Steve Cochran Show, Cochran Show on Twitter. And Dean is live at Channel 9.
I want to get that list from you.
The Madigan list?
I want anything that's free. I don't even know what it is. But is it free?
If it's free, it's for
me. I want it.
All right, I'll send it to you.
I want it.
We'll give that list to you coming up. All right, so in show business today, the greatest show on earth is about to end, and that is this election. Have you had a chance to early vote, or are you voting today?
No, I'm not, unless I'm going to be out of town, I like to vote on election day.
Yeah, see, I was going to, I'm the same as you, but I found out late yesterday I'm going to be watching The World's Perfect Grandchild, my granddaughter Abigail Grace, 10 months old, perfect. All the other grandkids should quit.
Well, I have a thing about this because, really, one of the best memories that I have about my dad was an immigrant and, became an American citizen, and he took his responsibility as an American so seriously. He wanted to live the American dream and, be part of this great country, and all that. So he took politics seriously. He took voting responsibility seriously, everything.
Yeah.
I remember so clearly on voting day, we'd walk to the polling place, all of us. He would take us, remember the old school voting booths with you pull the lever and the curtain closes behind
yep.
you.
Yep.
And you go in there and all the little switches, and he would let us, do the click that one and click that one and click that one, and we, voted with him. We voted with him. So
that's pretty cool.
It's a great memory that I have, but that's why I like going on election day, because it kind of reminds me of that.
Yeah, well, that's very cool. And I would have done it, but today Abigail and I will have to analyze the election. Abigail's booked on CNN all afternoon.
Is she really?
Yeah.
I don't know. They finally run out of panelists.
putting on a 10-month baby that doesn't talk much.
I wish we had someone on CNN that didn't talk much.
She's really cute when she says bubbles. I don't know what it means in regards to the election.
She's a non-talking head, and it's cute when she waves backwards.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm excited. We have a lot of referendums in Chicago. We have to, think about carefully and vote on. We have on all these election.
How do you feel about the clown ban?
I don't believe that made the ballot this year. I've been working feverishly against that, as you know. But we have the judicial retention ballots as well that a lot of people don't even vote in them. That's super important. There's a website that you can go to. Of course, I don't have it right next to me right now, but I think it's called, I don't remember. But there's a website that you can go to that gives...
Google?
It's an actual website. Wait a second.
Gives you what? It's the judges thing?
It's called voteforjudges.org.
Yeah, and it gives you a rundown on the judges.
It tells you about 10 different bar associations think of the judges. So, maybe your thinking is in alignment with, one bar association or the other. You can see what their recommendations are, because most of them are... recommended, but there are a lot of them that are not. These are the people who are before these judges every single day. So I think that's important.
Yeah, and another quickie way to figure out your ballot, again, is Ballot Ready, ballotready.org. So check that out.
Yeah, there you go. Look how responsible we're being today.
Very, I think is the word you're looking for.
Not one French accent in the whole segment today.
And David Orr is coming up. We're going to talk to David Orr about how voting's going so far in the process and all that. The texters this morning, Dean, there are still people out there who think that voter fraud and this rig nonsense goes on. And certainly there are instances where votes fall through the cracks, or somebody's registered twice, or a dead person vote is cast. In a country that's going to see somewhere between 120 and 150 million votes cast today, it's not going to elect the president. It's just not.
Yeah, it's going to happen. But it's, they've, as I'm sure David Orr will tell you in a few minutes, it's far and few between. And, there's been so much talk about rigged elections this time, essentially even before the election even started. But it's such a tiny percentage of that happens. Generally, it's caught very quickly. kind of, you know, rampant voter fraud that, you know, used to take place back in the old days with, you know, cigar-smoking political bosses. It's just, it's 1,000 times harder to do it these days. Believe me, I've tried.
Right.
I got a lot of dead relatives. I've tried.
And you can bring in, we'll talk to David Orr about this, you can bring in, you know, paperwork and things into the voting booth, but you can't take a selfie, so the Kardashians cannot vote today. I don't know if you heard that.
And put your clothes back on in that booth, too. Right. They don't have curtains anymore.
Yeah, I actually, because you can bring paper into the voting booth, I took a little extra time and did the Japanese art of origami yesterday.
Yeah, I'm going to wrap my Christmas presents when I'm in there.
That'll be great for the, you know, 500 people standing in line.
Yeah, the other people waiting in line, I'm trying to wrap a basketball.
Dean's got all sorts of Cubs on late night video for you to see on Channel 9. But before we leave, Dean, David Orr standing by. We'll get to him in just a second. I thought I'd take you out with sort of a representation of what this last year and a half or so in the election has been.
Oh, boy.
Here's a little sound from a Trump rally yesterday.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. See the dishonest people back there, the media, the totally dishonest. They are so dishonest.
Can you hear how Trump's trying to stop them and make them more respectable as they chant CNN sucks?
Oh, is that what they were?
Yeah, CNN sucks. CNN sucks.
Should be interesting if he were to win. You know, they do have a thing called the daily press briefing. Huh.
Yeah, it'd be a lot of fun. CNN sucks.
The CNN that's given him millions and millions of dollars worth of free time so he didn't have to spend his own money. There was some comedian who said that he's seen more of Trump's podium on CNN this year than the actual candidates. Because they're always, we're waiting for Donald Trump to show up at his rally.
Well, what people don't tell you is Secret Service had to pull Wolf Blitzer off him afterwards because he beat the hell out of Trump. Hey, 25, we're amusing ourselves during the break doing the mannequin challenge. I was going to do the mannequin challenge yesterday while I was voting. Be standing in line and somebody calls me up and I'm
posing.
Well, it's a mannequin. All right, so David Orr is standing by and nice of him to take the time here to inform the public of where we're at and how we're doing. Any problems this morning?
No, actually it's been going great. Remember, I do suburban cook. All the polling places are open. We're probably close to 100,000 voters already, maybe about 1,000 a minute. So it's going great.
That's fantastic. I did the touchscreen this time, David, for the first time because I voted early, actually, for the first time. Were you surprised at the records? Let's talk about the records that we've already set so far.
I am pleasantly surprised. There's an intensity we've not seen before. We had 130,000 more early voters this time than we did 4 years ago, and that's in suburban Cook alone. 130,000.
Wow. So the apathy that was predicted because of the fatigue from the presidential race, it's not playing out that way.
No, and remember, it certainly didn't play out. We're going to break a record with early voting. We're going to break a record with the number of people that voted by mail. I do think we'll have a very significant turnout. How high that goes, I couldn't tell you for sure. In recent memory, 76% was the highest, I believe, in 1992.
Okay.
And we may well break that. It's just hard to tell.
Yeah, it's good. The numbers are great. The numbers are phenomenal so far. But let's talk a little bit about what electioneering is, and if somebody sees something improper or there's something that they are concerned about, what should they do?
Okay. Remember, it's as long as you're 100 feet or more, and as long as both sides or three sides or whatever kind of follow the rules, you're fine. So outside the polling place, you know, the 100-foot rule, people can pass out literature, they can talk about their candidates. Once you get beyond the 100 feet, then, of course, that stops. We have poll watchers. I'm in an area right now where there's lots of poll watchers because it's a hot election between McAuliffe and Marwig. That's a big hot state rep race. So there's lots of volunteers outside the polling place. Poll watchers who have credentials can be inside the polling place, and they're there to kind of keep an eye on things. They have certain rights they can do, and, of course, there's certain limits. They have to take orders from the judges.
But otherwise, that seems to be working well so far. I'm sorry, now what else did you ask?
Electioneering, and if somebody sees something inappropriate, maybe their polling place wasn't open, malfunctioning machines, what do they do?
Well, they can call our hotline. Who's got the hotline number? Anybody here? We have a hotline. We have people, of course, they should report to election judges, who most of them call us. We're talking to them all day long. We have attorneys in the field. We have judges in the field. And I'm trying to see if someone, because we're out of the polling place, has a... Here we go. Where is it, David?
You want to get back to us with it?
We're standing by now as apparently David or his staff has been involved in the mannequin challenge and they tipped over.
I guess I would remind people, right, too. Well, does he have it?
Have you got it, David?
I don't have it yet.
All right, well, no worries. We'll get it. We can't wait on the air, obviously, but we'll get it. One other question before we let you go. And this is not your jurisdiction, but somebody said the touchscreen has a Safe Roads Amendment. Paper ballots did not. Is there a general answer to why there would be an inconsistency between the touchscreen and paper ballots in some areas?
Well, there is no inconsistency. Both of them have everything. But here's the problem. Like, let's say you're voting by paper, okay? Now, remember, there's two ballots, okay? Now, if you find a judge that's only handing you one, the ballots are all the same, but on paper you get two ballots. On touchscreen, you just scroll down. So if, in fact, someone says they didn't see the Safe Roads Amendment, whatever they call it, then perhaps an election judge didn't give them both ballots or they didn't vote both the ballots.
When you say two ballots, what do you mean?
When you're voting on paper, your choice today for all the voters is on a touchscreen or by paper. Paper means you basically got two big cards,
right?
Okay,
right.
They're almost like 8.5 by 22. Okay, they're big, and both sides, because you have all these candidates, everything from president on down to the various county officials.
So just make sure you're grabbing both paper. You know, and if a judge makes a mistake, just say I didn't get the other ballot.
Exactly.
All right. Good.
That's the key. So everyone should be given two ballots, and make sure that you vote both of them, and make sure you put both of them into the scanner.
All right, good. Well, good luck the rest of the day. We appreciate your time. That's David Orr, takes care of suburban Cook County. We'll find the hotline number that they don't have on them, and David will now flog his staff for not having it on him when he needed it. But again, ask for both ballots on the touchscreen. It's just a matter of scrolling up, scrolling down. It's the Wintrust Community Banks Hour. Coach Q coming up, and before 9 o'clock, I'm going to ask Pat Brady whether he thinks of the Madigan list and talk about why Mike Madigan has personally been holding this state hostage for far too long. It's 8:30, and we're back after this on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
.841 Who Music, always, for Coach Q. Coach Q is sponsored by Hooters, the original wing joint. I don't know if you know this, Hooters, it's a way of life. Sponsored as well by the Wintrust Community Banks, folks. We go to Coach Q now. Well, look what you did since the last time we talked. Team's completely turned around and can't be stopped.
Well, we've been fortunate, very comparable to what's been going on here for this stretch here. Goaltending's been spectacular and gives us a chance to get our feet under us and keeps us in games. And at the end of the night, a big factor in us winning. But there have been a lot of close games, and last game was a good example. Actually, both Dallas games were. And coming out on the winning side both nights was we felt fortunate to come up with 4 points, but definitely give the goalies a lot of the credit.
Six straight, and now getting production from the A-team as well. This is why the rest of the league doesn't want to play the Blackhawks, because when the Blackhawks get hot, I mean, look out. And you've set the bar very high here, Coach. We've gotten used to winning, as you know. And there's just a feel. There's just a feel to the Hawks when they get on a roll like this. And I got that feeling, Coach.
Well, it's every game's different, and there's been areas of our game that have improved, and certainly our penalty killing's been a big improvement since the start.
So much better,
way more effective in a lot of ways. The way they're moving and getting the job done Timely production is there. Anisimov's already gotten off to a tremendous start to the year, and a lot of guys there, our top guys, are producing, and I think we're starting to see a little bit better rotation of the four lines, which I think we can still be improved in that area, and we can have the puck a little bit more. But certainly, you know, we'll take the wins, and but we still need to get better in some areas.
I need to explain the penalty kill to Dave. Dave, yes. What we're talking about here, Dave, is rotation.
Yes.
So I told the coach the other day, I said, let's play musical pucks. When the music stops, somebody better smack a puck out of the zone.
it worked.
It really seemed to work. Coach, don't you think that was the key?
There you go. Whatever works. Whatever it takes.
If he could reach through the phone and pat me on the head, he would.
I'm not sure he would pat you on the head.
Maybe smack me in the face. One of those two.
Coach, how come when it seems like when you put Kane and Taves together, it does breed success for you, and it happens even when they haven't skated together for a while? Is that just a testament to just how great these guys are as players?
Oh, they're great players. They're tremendous guys and great players as well, and they make guys around them better. And we feel when they're apart, we have that much more for our opponents to be concerned with. And when they're together, they still get some other line mates as the game goes along. And when they're not together, they still get a lot of shifts together, be it after a penalty kill or on the power play and some other shifts as well late in period. So it's not like they get away from one another you know, on a game-to-game basis. They still have a lot of shifts together, and I think they like playing with each other. And but it's we like to keep them apart for the majority of the year for the consideration of who they're going to play and who they're going to match up their top line against. And sometimes you get a little better matchup with the other group who they don't put the heavy group against.
At the Blues tomorrow night, it's a good hockey team, even though they've been a little bit up, a little bit down. I think they're 7-5 so far. Big boys, and not attractive, by the way, Dave. I don't know if you ever noticed that about the Blues. They hate puppies and they hate their grandmothers. But what are you looking at with the Blues, and who do we need to watch for?
Well, I think the Blues got the balanced look. They got everybody plays the right way. They play a real good team game. They have the puck a lot, a very active D. I think that's the consideration we got to be worried about. But Stastny's line, you could talk about all their lines. Tarasenko's the one guy that can shoot it better than anybody around the league, and, you know, play a little close to him. I just think across the board, when you play St. Louis, it's not a lot of room, and it's a tight game, and the chance numbers are usually low. But every game's kind of different, like we said earlier, that, expect anything against St. Louis. But the best thing they do well is they don't give you any room, and we want to make sure that we get out of our end quickly.
We'll let you go on. Do you got one more, Dave?
Well, I just want to ask about this week. How much of a test is this for you with three really exceptional teams? The Blues on the road, then you come home and you've got Montreal and Washington, two of the top teams from the Eastern Conference, and Montreal right now leading the way for the league.
Well, we got Shazzy be coming in on Sunday night. I'm sure he'll be excited, and his teammates will be excited with him and for him. So it'll be that'll be a tough game. And Wash is playing well, and they always play us tough. So it's a that's a good test, and we know the importance and how big the St. Louis game is as well. So we'll look at the one game tomorrow night, and hopefully sustain where we're at right now, and still think there's room for us to improve and come home and with two games before we go on a tremendously tough trip at the end of the month. So that's what we got ahead of us.
Before I let you go, are you in mid-season nickname form yet? You got a lot of new guys on this team.
Not yet. We haven't haven't formulated the nicknames yet. We haven't come up with any good ones yet. So we're.
I know you got Reamer, obviously Van Riemsdyk, but what do you do with the Hinostroza?
We TBR. We went to TBR there.
Yeah, probably better. What do you do with the Hinostroza?
Vinny.
Really? Impressive. How about Tutu? What are you doing with Tutu?
It's either some guys call him Jordan or Toots.
Toots is good. I like that. Let's see. Schmaltzy? Is that it? Schmaltzy?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that was good, Steve. You picked that right up.
Yeah, Schmaltzy. You know, I like to go out on a win, Coach. I got Schmaltzy right. Oh, look, our time's up. All right, enjoy the Election Day festivities here, and then tomorrow we look forward to another fine performance by your Chicago Blackhawks. Good, really good run here, Coach. Keep it up.
All right, thanks, guys.
This is an attack on our democracy. Refusing to say whether or not he would accept the outcome of the election. Well, let's show tomorrow there will be no question about the outcome of this election.
It's the final countdown. The final countdown.
8:53, it's election day. Oh, you knew that? Okay. I hope you voted already, and if not, I hope you make plans. Don't leave it till the end of the day. And if you have to leave it to the end of the day, make sure you leave enough time to do it. We're expecting lines to be long in most places. The Madigan list. Pat Brady's here. Pat, I had a really good source on the Madigan list. And the Madigan list is a list of names of people who, and a lot of these people have been featured in commercials that have been running all the time, of people who are directly tied to Mike Madigan. All the people that I'm about to mention, again, have been invited on this show and will continue to be invited on this show, win or lose, to explain why I'm wrong in saying that they are tied way too tightly to Mike Madigan. They are also crucial players in this election and going forward, because in my belief, and I think you may share this belief, Madigan got to go. It's way past time, and he is choking the state to death. Okay? So there's your premise. Here are the candidates. Comptroller candidate Susana Mendoza. Running against Leslie Munger. State Rep Mary Marwig, though I believe this particular state rep said she wouldn't say whether she'd vote for him for speaker again.
Which is what they typically do, and then they vote for him.
Yeah, they wait till they win.
Take a step back to what you're talking about. It's a balance of power. There's too much power vested in one person who's been down there for 45 years. And every 2 years, maybe people don't realize this, he gets elected as Speaker of the House, and he gets elected by the Democrats in the House that he makes sure get elected.
Yeah, and he also has created, because the Democrats have been in power, he has created the legislative map for 10 years, which right. includes races today that many people will walk into with unopposed candidates. That's what the whole Independent Maps Amendment is about. He has no answer for the fact that he has been involved in one of the biggest conflicts of interest this country's ever seen for a high-level politician, and that is his private business benefiting from public influence. Again, something he's never fully been able to refute. He rides the side of legal versus illegal very closely, and he plays old school daily politics here to accumulate as much power as possible from as many people as possible to stay in power. While his narrow self-interests are part and parcel, if not the main driver to the economic problems we have in this state.
Yeah, and it's just it flat out just not working. He controls virtually every process in the legislature. So if there's a piece of law that you want done, maybe good public policy you want done, it doesn't get done unless he wants it to get done. And if he doesn't want it, it goes to the Rules Committee and dies. We need balance, and we don't have balance right now. And I guess maybe it would be okay if it was working out for us, but we are at the bottom of virtually every category you can use to measure the success of our government, from our bond rating to the public schools, to roads and bridges, to anything, to attracting business. Anything you want to use to measure our state, we're at the bottom. So it's in... If you continue to vote this way and continue to support the people that support him, we're not going to get a change.
And what
it boils down to ethics, too, and morals. I mean, it's unethical, so much of the stuff that goes on.
Well, and what business would someone be allowed to stay around for? Is this 47 years? Is that how long he's been in?
45, yeah. Longest serving. And Chuck Todd made this point a couple weeks ago. He is the last person with this much power, machine-type power, in the country.
Yeah. Nobody in Louisiana. Nobody in Mississippi.
California, New York,
nobody in California. Nobody in any of the places. Rhode Island. Nobody in any of the places that used to have these kind of setups. But what business would have one of their executives, let's say a partner in the company, be around for 45 years with this failure rate?
It wouldn't happen.
It wouldn't happen. And there's no regular job where you would have this kind of tenure.
And our biggest, one of our biggest problems here budget-wise is the deficit and the debt. And a lot of that relates to the public sector pensions. And there's this other unholy alliance between the pensions, these public sector pensions that write big checks to the speaker and the trial lawyers to keep him in power. But the flip side of that is then they turn around and negotiate their contracts and their pension deals. So it's just a very big conflict of interest and too much power accumulated in one person.
And a complete gutless approach to answering questions of the media, to the point where the Queen of England is easier to book than this guy. Somebody texted earlier, go, the only reason you don't like Madigan is because he won't do your show. No, the only reason I don't like Madigan is because, in my opinion, he's a criminal and he's choking the state to death. Secondarily, yeah, he ought to do this show. But you know what? He ought to do all the shows. He ought to do the newspapers. He ought to be on TV. He needs to explain himself and why he is not the primary cause of the continuing demise of this state. You can line up Republicans from here to the 60s who have also been part of this problem. But he's the guy that's been in power long enough. And whether you like Rauner or hate Rauner, Rauner has pared down his list of things he wanted to accomplish to about two, including term limits, and Madigan will say no to him every chance he gets.
And running from reporters down back alleys doesn't really help the cause.
It's good for your credibility.
Yeah.
But then his surrogates will tell you he's not going to give Rauner any victories because he wants Rauner to be a one-termer. The first day he met with Governor Rauner, he told him, I've survived six or seven governors, and I'll survive you. But that's interesting theater, but it's not good for the people of the state who are really hurting.
The rest of the list, Susana Mendoza, Mary Marwick, Michelle Mussman. These are all state rep candidates now. Michelle Mussman, Mike Smitty, SMIDDY, Sam Yingling, Kate Cloonan, John Bradley, and Carol Senti. I have no personal relationships with anybody on this list. I'm not endorsing or de-endorsing their opponents. I'm just telling you, they are all directly tied to Madigan.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
I was wrong about Trump's possibilities, probabilities, and likelihood of becoming the nominee.
Okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
Trump has now received enough delegates to clinch the nomination to be the Republican nominee for president.
Thank you, darling.
He won, I lost.
I'm so honored. So honored by these people. They had such great sense.
Trump is so concerned about himself.
Guy says, I love your hair, Trump. You believe it?
He hasn't elucidated or explained in any way, shape, or form how he's going to get anything done from his stupid Mexican wall.
Maybe they'll name it after Trump. I'd really much rather have a statue in Washington, D.C.
He, of course, is in charge of our foreign policy and helped determine foreign policy.
If they're rattled in a friendly way, we're going to have great relationships with these countries.
I believe he's dangerous.
In terms of the draw, I won't have to worry about the draw. I'm the last person.
Careful, Democrats, what you wish for. Trump is very, very, very capable making Hillary Clinton crazy. Is now a 50-50 shot to be the president. But you don't start a fire to save a house. And that's my concern.
How about that whole deal?
God help us all.
Fine work, Jake. Mike Jacobson, the conductor.
I feel like I'm watching a Hollywood blockbuster.
Getting it done.
That's awesome.
9-12. And for those of you that missed the review, I support Senator Durbin, Senator Kirk, and I'm dead set against Donald Trump and Mike Madigan. So if you'd like to call me a Democrat or a Republican, pick your side, and I'll watch your head explode.
It's been quite a 500 and some days, hasn't it?
Is that what it's been?
I remember it started with the McCain insult, and you called me up. He goes, you're coming on today, aren't you?
Wow. That's unbelievable.
It was last a year ago July.
This has got to change. It's got to change. We say it all the time, but then we lose interest. But there's no reason for a campaign to last 500 days. It's ridiculous.
They were doing a clock in the very beginning. It was like day one, day two, day 17. They and they stretched ahead. And it was like day 600. I thought,
whoever wins tonight, most people see it as a one-termer. And this presidential race starts tomorrow.
Oh, please. Give us one day of no political ads.
There won't be any ads, but the candidates.
Oh, I can guarantee you Marco Rubio doesn't care that he won the Senate. Marco Rubio will be figuring out how to not drink too much water and look more like a big boy next time.
Yeah.
So we probably won't get into campaign 2020, though, until Friday. So that's good news for the audience.
Get a day's reprieve.
We just gave you the Madigan list. Former Republican leader Tom Cross is on the phone. And Tom Cross, aside from being a good guy and a fine golfer, dealt with Madigan for years and years and years. Why is it so tough for Republicans to regain a foothold as long as he's hanging around?
Well, first of all, let me thank you for doing that intro on Trump. I didn't know where either you or Pat Brady were in that whole race.
That's a good point. We have been subtle.
I listen to you guys most every day, and I'm like, where are these guys in this race? And they, please tell us who they're for. And so you cleared the air on that, and that helps me a lot.
Take a stand, Steve. Take a stand, Pat.
Look, I think there are a couple things, and this is this election, and who knows how tonight turns out, but historically, presidential years for Republicans in this state are very, very difficult. They're just, the raw turnout on the Democrat side makes it very difficult. You've also got a map that, and I think we could, you want to talk about it. I think redistricting is maybe the most critical issue, in, not only in the state, but in this country. And then I think you have, so you've got a map that's very strong to the Democrats, and they've drawn the map the last few decades. And then you've got, surprisingly enough, as I was looking at numbers last night, from a financial standpoint, a lot of talk about Republican money, and it's, and there's been a lot. But the Democrats, I think, at the end of the day, are going to even just spend a little more than Republicans, which is hard to believe, all the money that's been in this race. So those three factors are very significant as you look at today, and we'll see how things play out tonight.
So if the Republicans are lucky to pick up a couple House seats, I mean, that's a big victory, I would think, for Jim Durkin, Governor Rauner, and Republicans.
Oh, yeah. I totally agree, because you've seen success on the Republican side is in the non-presidential years, and any pickup for Jim and the governor net pickup, I think is big, because this map, you know, the courts have allowed, and both parties are guilty on redistricting, but in Illinois it happens to be a Democrat map, have allowed the maps to be drawn in a very political way, and it's a very, very difficult map for Republicans to win. And then again, it's just the turnout's going to be, historically, who knows? I don't think anybody knows who's really coming to vote today. I know a lot of people have theories, and we won't know until tonight or tomorrow morning. But the Democrats, has a general rule, are going to just have a greater turnout. And Democrats, for all the complaining that'll go on, you know, about whether I like Bernie, I like Hillary, whatever, they always come home. And they usually, as a general rule, vote, and they'll be there for Hillary, and then I'm down the ticket.
You brought up a great point. In 2010, when you were a Republican minority leader, you came basically within 5,000 votes of becoming Speaker. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, and what's interesting in that deck, in that, if you'll remember, Bill Brady, are you guys brothers, by the way?
Bill Brady, no.
There's a downstate Bloomington contingent of over a million Bradys.
It's a family vine, Tom.
Yeah. And a Mount Greenwood.
Who's the oldest brother? You or Bill? But anyway.
No. We all graduated very bottom of our class, I'll tell you that.
Well, I think there are a lot of people that question whether any of you graduated, but that's a whole other story, except for you. But again, it's a great point, Pat, that in that election cycle, if Bill Brady had won, I think we picked up six. I think most people say we would have picked up more, and the margin was that thin. So that you just, the difference between presidential and non-presidential is very significant in this state. And, you know, Governor Rauner won in non-presidential years. We all know, and Senator Kirk won in the first time in a non-presidential year.
You know, Todd, you were down there a long time, and a guy that got along with a lot of people. And I have a lot of good friends that are Democrats. It seems to me there is right now a willingness in the rank and file to get something done, but they're being held up at the very top.
Oh, I think that's always to a large degree the case. And, you know, you've allowed this process. You know, a lot of people talk about how great it was to lower the number of members of the General Assembly. Remember when Pat Quinn had the cutback amendment that sounded really good, to go from 177 to 118. And the reality is what that did is it just put power into the four leaders. And I'm not so sure. I don't think that was a good idea as we look back on it. So all the power is concentrated basically in the four leaders and the governor. So I do think that the members want to do something. I think the other problem that exists, I think that we aren't, as much as all of us in this phone call realize it's really, really bad out there. And I mean, we're spending $7 to $8 billion this year. The state is, that we don't have unpaid bills, $8 to $10 billion. Very, very significant. For the general public, no one, I'm not sure everybody is feeling it. You feel it in the human services sector if you're running one of those facilities, or social service sector. Higher ed certainly feels it. I'm working at, I'm the chair of the Board of Higher Ed. But generally speaking, people on the street, a lot of people just don't have an idea of how significant this is. So when you don't have a crisis, I don't think that there's a sense of urgency that there really needs to be to fix this.
But here's the problem. The crisis word you just used is a key word. If we have a crisis, we have no money to pay for anything. If we have a crisis and suddenly it does show up on the doors of everybody who's not engaged now, Well, you're going to be going, well, I should have paid attention 6 months ago. You have to be involved now, not just on election day, but you got to be ringing the phones and sending the emails to these reps and going, I'm not going to vote for you. I'm not going to support you because you're not doing a job.
Well, Tom's involved in higher ed, too. And I think at a crisis, it does kind of hit home for a lot of people. Now, maybe it's because I'm a tuition check writer for college students. College costs is just
ridiculous.
It's unaffordable. I mean, is there going to be any breakthrough on that or any help on that or any reform of that?
Well, you've got not only just that issue in general, but you know one of the big issues that I think is really detrimental to kids in this state is the MAP program has not been funded, the monetary assistance program. And can you imagine, you're a first generation kid, you want to go to college, you have the interest in going to college, but the MAP program's not funded. And when you don't go to college, that when you leave senior year of high school and you want to go to college, and you don't get an opportunity to go because you can't financially afford it, there's a real good chance, and the odds are you're not going to go. That you're going to then end up getting into the workforce and that dream to go to college. So you've got so many things. And I think in higher ed, Pat, the crisis is being felt, certainly by the people running schools. But I'm just talking, and I'm not at all suggesting that we're not in a crisis stage, but not everybody sees it.
I agree with you. But by the time people wake up, my concern is it's going to be too late. It's not like we're going, hey, all we are is one good week away from turning this ship around. I mean, come on.
I don't quote, but I will say, to your point and your question, wasn't trying to avoid it. The rank and file members do and can put pressure on their leaders, and while we don't think that happens, it does happen. So, to your point, Steve and Pat, if I'm the Republican leader and I'm hearing and that member is hearing from a university president, a social service provider, or a hospital provider, and the list goes on and on, then they're going to feel pressure. They're going to, in turn, put pressure on their leaders to say, you've got to get this done. And that you need to really, you need to crank that up.
Are we ever going to see term limits in the state?
I don't think you'll see term limits, but I believe redistricting is the key to all this. I think that's the problem in D.C. You've got the courts have allowed us to do redistricting in a very political way. So you look what's going on in the House. The Republicans around the country in General Assemblies did a very good job of taking over the houses right as redistricting was coming along. And so they've created a probably a pretty sure thing for holding the House in this cycle, and it could be a bad one for Republicans. But what happens is you have both sides playing to the extremes. And what they're doing is they're only worrying about their primaries. They're not worrying about their generals.
This is the thing, that's what's going on. I understand. I'm not giving you a hard time at all because I know you get it. But this is what makes people crazy. Yeah. Every conversation that we have, every conversation you hear deep into politics on any of the networks, we're always talking about how people are strategizing to save their jobs. That's easily two-thirds of every political conversation. The other third is, oh, yeah, and maybe they'll take care of this or that. I mean, it's so upside down. The process is completely ass backwards.
You look at the dysfunction. There are other things. We can talk about, social media, the inability to have a substantive conversation, the inability to have a conversation and not get angry, the inability to solve problems. But a large part of this dysfunction, in my opinion, is the fact that if I'm in a Republican seat, I'm always looking over my shoulder. Pat, you both know this. I'm always looking over my shoulder, worried about my next primary. Not a general, and so I'm not going to vote for anything, in essence, to solve a problem. I'm not going to make the difficult vote.
And the speaker manipulates the votes, knowing that full well. So it's way in the weeds, but that's how it works down there. That's why nothing gets done.
But my point is, this goes on around the country, not only in Congress and certainly here, but both parties are guilty of this.
I just go back to common sense. And the fact is, we don't have the money to pay the pension. We sit around going, well, we can't do anything about it because the courts keep kicking it out. Well, shut it down then. Just shut it down. Because eventually the state's going to be out of business because that's how the real world works in a certain way. And while politics is different, it can't be so different that those who make the rules set up the rules, that the rules can never be changed. How is that a democracy?
What's really scary to your point is that the problems, when you put them off because you don't want to confront them, when you confront them, they get worse. And worse and worse, and then the ability to confront them in any logical, sensible way gets almost impossible. And that's what scares me about where we are, because these numbers are getting so huge that the solutions are going to be very, very difficult.
So skipping the pension payments in 2004 and 2005 was probably not a good idea.
understatement, understatement of the day.
Texter says, I worked at a McHenry restaurant, held many events for Republicans. I told a few people my Obama button was under my apron until they left. Tom Cross is absolutely a smart and kind man. Many people treated us as invisible, but never him. That's nice.
Yeah. I didn't know my mom lived in McHenry. I thought she was in Nicaragua. Well, that's what you do. You be nice to your mom, and she texts those things.
Appreciate you being on, and thanks for the time, bud.
And seriously, thanks for coming out and letting us know where you are in the presidential race. You guys have a great day.
I got to tell you, I'm in the middle. I'm completely in the middle on this. It's 9:25 back after this on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
You have one day to make every dream you've ever dreamed for your country and your family come true.
This election is basically between division and unity.
You have one magnificent chance to beat this corrupt system.
It is a choice between strong, steady leadership or a loose cannon.
Now we have one flawed candidate to beat.
Well, let's show tomorrow there will be no question about the outcome of this election.
I think it's going to be a Brexit plus, plus, plus. Does that make sense?
Let's get out and vote, Philadelphia, tomorrow. Let's make history together.
Drain the swamp.
Man, are we going to miss it. The good news is, regardless of who wins tonight, the impeachment talk will start in the morning. Oh, I'm already punchy. I will live tweet the election results tonight until I pass out. So follow me on Twitter at Cochran Show for that good time.
Don't pass out till there's a winner.
Texters from the 847. We should have a reboot box on the ballot. 51% or more heard in a bunch of new candidates. You know, if you could reboot, you know, what if you had like just one box you could check that go, none of these? And then you're done.
None of the above, like on a test?
Yeah, 309. When I voted 4 years ago, there were three cars in a lot. Today it was full. Same polling place. 847, are you so ignorant to think fraud in voting isn't huge? No, I'm not actually ignorant. I actually do the homework. There is no huge voting fraud. I hate to break it to you. There just isn't.
There's not.
There are voting problems all over the country in every major city. But the idea that there are millions of votes that are being swung, come on, grow up. 847, the paper ballot is unwieldy. We need something that's not... What would be the opposite of unwieldy? Wieldy. We need something wieldy. More wieldy. It is big. It's giant.
It is.
Yeah. Steve, my husband and one of my coworkers who had never voted before are voting today. That's how powerful this election year is. How about that?
Good. They're voting. Yeah.
And Steve, can you read the Madigan list one more time? I'd be happy to. List of 8 candidates. One running for comptroller, the others for state rep, all tied far too closely to Madigan. My opinion, they need to come on this show and explain why I'm wrong, or you need to not vote for them because we need to break down the foundation of Madigan to get rid of them. They are comptroller candidate Susana Mendoza, state rep candidates as follows: Mary Marwick, Michelle Mussman, Mike Smitty, Sam Yingling, Kate Clunan, John Bradley, and Carol Senti. It's 9:44, and Big O is standing by. Have you ever seen anything close to this?
No. No, I first voted for president in 1952 when I voted for Dwight D. Eisenhower. And this election is the toughest one I have ever seen for me personally. Really.
And the candidates that should be heard, and there are many, are not getting heard because of the white noise at the top.
Absolutely, and I blame those of us in media for part of it. We're more interested in taking a quote from Donald Trump than asking about security and asking Hillary about security and all those things. So as John Williams often said and often says, when I become king, I will decree that no campaign will run more than 60 days. If you can't convince me in 60 days, you deserve my vote. you can't do it.
I think that's it. That's absolutely right. Pat Brady, we got to say goodbye to Andre, who's headed for the airport.
I'm heading out to New York. We'll be there, Hillary headquarters tonight. Giuliano is going to be at Trump headquarters, so we'll have everything covered live.
It's pretty exciting.
Very exciting. I know. I was just saying to Steve, it's cool. We started with the caucuses. Yep. Went to the New Hampshire primary.
Remember, we almost got snowed in Iowa.
Remember that? I know. It was a beautiful day, and then the next day, it was just a massive snowstorm.
It was a blizzard. Yeah.
It was a blizzard. And then New Hampshire primary, the convention, so this will culminate.
Did you go to South Carolina? No, you went to New Hampshire.
I went to New Hampshire, yeah.
Well, good luck. Get going. You're going to miss your
plane. All right, sounds good. See you. Have fun. Be careful. Talk to you in the morning from New York.
And thank you, Sprinkles Cupcakes, for the donkey and elephant cupcakes.
Oh, those are really good.
I got one stuck to my finger right now.
I know, the goo in the middle was really good.
You know, I think in 1960, when Richard Nixon could have absolutely made a case that the election was stolen from him, and he said he wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
In 2000, when Al Gore could have asked for a recount in Florida, he said he wouldn't do it. My concern is tonight that if Trump does not win, he may make this ugly and extend it. I mean, unless there is absolute reason to suspect something, and if I suspect something, I mean something close to a recount. I certainly hope he doesn't do that.
I do, too. And the other comment I would make, those of us involved in producing what we all need before we can do anything else, food, fiber, and energy, and our concern is, regardless of who is elected, what's going to happen to agriculture and who will be in the cabinet as Secretary of Agriculture, because both candidates have exhibited practically no knowledge of agriculture, what it takes to produce what we do, and practically no knowledge of trade and trade agreements. So whoever is elected, I hope, will select a Secretary of Agriculture that is strong and that could make his point on these two issues, particularly with whoever is in the White House. It's going to be a critical election for the agricultural community, which incidentally is a lot more than the 2% of the people who are actually farming and ranching, because when you count all of the people who make a living off agriculture, it's over 20% here in the United States. So that's going to be my concern, and I think the concern of agriculture.
Pat, say hello.
Hi, Maureen. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Pat. Hope you are, too.
I'm doing great. Thanks. You know, that issue you just brought up about agriculture, and I watched this like we all did. I did not hear one agriculture-related question the entire campaign.
I didn't hear a question. I didn't hear a statement. I didn't hear anything brought up.
Well, at one point in the Iowa primaries, where if you don't mention ethanol and biodiesel, you're in trouble. So there, I think, maybe a couple of statements about it. But since that time, Trump did appoint an agricultural advisory committee of 62 people. I know many of the people on there. They're very, very set in how they feel about agriculture. Hillary, I don't think, even has an agriculture advisory committee. But again, I come back to the fact that neither candidate, I think, has any understanding of agriculture.
Especially the trade portion of agriculture. It was all about manufacturing.
True. By the way, you know, I would, because when you have trade agreements, you always hear the term, we have shipped millions of jobs overseas, but I've never seen a number that anybody can verify on how many million jobs we have shipped overseas. And what about the Japanese auto workers who watch their companies build plants in the United States and hire people here?
We have always been upside down in trade. The idea of trade agreements like NAFTA is to balance the equation and to make other countries live under the same rules that we abide by to make it more fair. And I would argue all day long that NAFTA has done that.
It has. And all three countries involved in NAFTA have benefited. Not every segment of the economy of the three countries, Mexico, Canada, and the United States, but overall trade has grown dramatically. Jobs have been gained in all three countries. And when it comes to trade, Dean Kleckner, who served as president of the American Farm Bureau for years, he's since passed, but said it many times, if it don't go both ways, it ain't trade.
And then, Senator Kirk often talks, too, about infrastructure as it relates to trade, particularly agriculture, like dredging out the Mississippi to make it easier to get corn down and over to the across the ponds. I don't know. Yeah. That never came up in the campaign at all either.
No, it didn't. And interestingly enough, the locks and dams on the Mississippi and the Illinois are now nearly a century old. And if we have to shut those down for repairs, it takes about 20 years to build a new lock and dam to handle the traffic. And if we shut down the waterway, how do we get to the Gulf, and how do we get on the huge ships that will now go through a Panama Canal that has been modernized and widened? And we're sitting here with nearly a century-old infrastructure that is collapsing. Congress has approved work, but then they don't approve the funds. And so we've been talking about this for 20 years, and it sounds like we'll keep talking about it.
Hillary Clinton, I did see an analysis that one of her things to try to get something done in a bipartisan fashion is that big infrastructure bill. And hopefully that applies to what you're talking about.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, it has to. And, I know you vote. I vote. Yes. I actually voted early yesterday for the first time.
Well, I voted a week ago.
Yeah. And everybody needs to go out and express their view, regardless of how it is. And I'll just repeat what I've said before, regardless of what Pat said or I've said, and I can't speak for Pat on this, but I will support a President Trump if he is elected. I will support the presidency and anybody in the office because it's the only way we can come together as a country.
And the thing that I remember is, regardless of who's in the White House, the country is bigger than the individual. And
We just hope we don't have to prove that in the next week or two.
So. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And then the other decree I would make if I'm king, airplane seats do not recline, okay?
They don't recline.
Except mine.
They don't. No, you can't recline. Listen, no. Listen, you're a good friend, bud, but if you're sitting in front of me, you're not coming back. I'm not there to wash your hair. Thanks, Hope.
Okay, have a good day.
Sorian Samuelson. Much like the end of a Super Bowl pregame, when predictions are finally made on how the game will turn out, Pat and I will make our predictions on this election when we come back, and actually based on facts and data. And Dave, you'll chime in as well.
Should we get Hamp on the line? No, maybe not.
Probably not for this segment. Yeah. We also have Wang Dang Doodle results. You know what? Hold that for tomorrow. We'll come back and we'll do our prediction on the election in a moment on 720 WGN. Texter, good morning, Steve. Love the show. I have a question for you. I'd like an answer. If the superdelegates in the Electoral College are the entities which truly decide the next president, what's our vote worth? Pat, you and I discussed this earlier. Pat Brady's here. And the answer to that is the Electoral College is driven by the popular vote. Yeah. Those electors meet in December. It's important for you to vote. You can argue all day about whether the Electoral College is ultimately needed or not. It's only been an exception to the popular vote four times in our history. It's very unlikely to be tonight and tomorrow. But if you don't vote, you don't vote down ballot, and you don't vote for the rest of the races that don't have anything to do with the Electoral College. You need to vote.
And don't confuse superdelegates, which is a primary term, which has its problems, with electoral delegates. Two different things.
Friday, we have our big veterans hiring fair. You can go to WGNradio.com/events. It's sponsored by Fifth Third Bank and Career Builder. Give you more details on that tomorrow. And here's how hip these two candidates are as you take off and decide to vote today. Donald Trump on Jay-Z, and listen carefully who Jay-Z's wife is on their influence on the campaign.
So she gets Jay-Z. He uses the worst language I have ever heard. And by the time he's finished, what's happened? What happens? He and Beyonce, right? They're finished. By that time, most of the people have left. So she thinks she's getting people. By the time she speaks, they're all gone anyway. She should just take a small room and talk.
I felt like I was watching.
Just take a small
room. I felt like I was watching MTV News from the 80s or the 90s. He's all over it. He was calling her Beyonce. I thought that was it, but that wasn't it. And then Hillary did a living on a prayer joke. They both need to never, ever try to be entertaining, no matter what they're doing.
Or hip.
All right, predictions before we go. Let's start with Mark Kirk and Tammy Duckworth.
Let me say one thing really quickly, because in the last 18 months, you and I have been railing on Donald Trump, which, God love this country, we have a First Amendment right to do that. So we also have an obligation as citizens if he does win. He's our president. We have to support
him. That's exactly right.
So as much fun as we've had doing that, if he wins, I support him. My prediction for the Senate race, I think Mark Kirk pulls it up.
I do, too. I think incredibly close, but I think he wins tonight, and I think that's good for Illinois.
I do, too.
Control of the Senate and House. Illinois. Here, I'll go first.
Okay.
Control of the Senate and House. I think the Democrats will gain control of the Senate. The House, it's a no-brainer. The Republicans stay in charge.
I agree. And that's the U.S.
That's the United States, yes. Okay. Yes. And finally, the big kahuna. For President of the United States, your choice.
Jill Stein. Green Party.
Seems totally right. Yeah.
I love trees.
Boy, is that going to be an upset.
It's you're the woman, I told you.
Yeah. In Electoral College number, where do you think it's coming in?
She'll get a 320 or above.
I'm thinking around 300 and also Hillary Clinton.
What's the bet?
You know, drinks at the Trump Tower.
That's right. All right. You're on. You're on. And you don't drink, so I'll have to drink for you. That could be expensive.
I'll have a sarsaparilla and a grape knee high. I want to thank my friend Pat Brady for all this morning. Of course, we got to break this all down tomorrow, so we won't be long before I see you again. But thank you, man.
All right. You're welcome.